From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of June, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. We'll hear about ECO and SCO estimated payments for last fall's harvest for corn and soybeans in Illinois and across the nation. We'll do that with Nick Polson from University of Illinois and the Farm Doc team. And we'll talk about the weather, too, with Mike T-storm weather, and along the way, we'll take a quick look at what's happening with the bird rule in Washington, D.C. as it relates to SNAP benefits and the One Big Beautiful Bill, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org, where we're hopeful that you will also hit that donate button at the top of the page, or go to willgive.org prior to the end of the month, June 30th. We'll need everything in the bank that we're going to use next year. By that date, our fiscal year ends then, and we start using what's in the bank on July 1.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day down 0.75 cents. December, a penny and a half lower. Nearby July beans, 2.5 lower. And the November contract down 2 cents. Wheat futures for the soft red, 7.25 lower. They settled at 5.21. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us. I'd like to start with corn. Can you lay out what you think's been happening over the last several sessions?
Well, Todd, it's obviously been an ugly market. There's just not been a whole lot in the way of anything good to talk about. You know, whenever you look at what's probably driving the market the most is, of course, in my opinion, this big Brazil crop. I mean, AgriConsult comes out this week at 123.3 on Safrina. That was up 10 million tons. I mean, that's a significant, that's 300-400 million bushels of corn. And so, yeah, that's just up from the previous estimate. So clearly, the trade has known for some time, you know, that this Brazil crop is going to be a big one. And I think that what most people are looking at is they're looking ahead. Hey, what's the new crop balance sheet going to look like if you have to extract, you know, I don't know, 200-400 million bushel out of the U.S. Export thing? I'm not saying we will. I just think that that's something that's been weighing over the market, because I still think usage is strong. I still think you'll have a tight quarterly stocks number next week. But the other thing that's probably hurting the market, of course, is this acreage thing. And I do think acreage will come in fairly high next week.
Yeah, so those reports are due out on Monday, acreage and grain stocks numbers. To put the numbers from Brazil, and this was not from CONAB or where we usually would get figures from, a different private consultancy group, it was something in the neighborhood of a 14 bushel to the acre yield increase. It was just an enormous number. I think it was per acre. I don't think it was per hectare. But it was an increase of inordinate size. So that's putting a lot of pressure on the marketplace. You have new contract lows in both July and December corn. This is happening a full month before it did last year, 2 months, I think, for December corn. How do you see that playing out in the near term?
Well, part of the problem that you've got, of course, Todd, is that so many people are looking at really good crops. You know, you just don't have a lot of people driving around saying, hey, it looks rough here, it looks rough there. Now, hey, where I'm at, south of you a little ways, we haven't caught any of these rains here lately, so we're actually dry. I mean, I wouldn't say we're hurting yet. Most of this corn's rolling. It's a good defense mechanism for it, but bottom line is we're going to need some rain before long, because these 95 degree days, while the corn is still growing, it's really struggling through this kind of heat. And of course, these really warm nights, it's not the end of the world, but we don't want these really warm nights after pollination, because that typically does not bode well for you to build a big ear. But, you know, part of the problem is that everyone's looking at big crops right now. So right now you've got a lot of yield forecasts out there above that 181 from the USDA. So if you see something like that paired with a 95.5, 96, and coincidentally our number's 95.8, we feel pretty strongly that you gain more acres in the areas that we're able to run with good progress. And efficiency this spring than what you probably lost in Ohio down through the Delta. So, if you plug a 95.8 into your balance sheet with a 183 yield, it's not a number that you're really going to want to look at too close.
Do you have combined acreage for corn and soybeans going up? Meaning, do you also have a bigger number for soybeans?
No, we do not. So we're at 83.2 on beans. We feel like you probably lost a handful of acres in the switching process. Now, we feel like some of those acres that were abandoned for corn probably went to soybeans. We just feel like in Nebraska, Iowa, northern Illinois, and into the Dakotas, there was a fair amount of folks that were able to roll good with corn, had good conditions, and just kept right on rolling. So we feel like that those acres most likely came at the expense of soybeans. So we're looking at total acreage being fairly similar. I could see it being up though, Todd, given the fact this spring was actually a pretty good spring. Didn't have a whole lot of super wet areas other than, of course, Ohio through the Delta.
Grain stocks also due out on Monday morning at 11 a.m. Central Time. The cattle and feed number was down. You have the number of birds earlier in the year drastically reduced at some points. And then, of course, you have to throw ethanol into that mix. How much do you think was used, and what will that number show as to what's on hand still in the United States for corn?
There's a lot of different guesses out there that we're going to be down anywhere from 200 to 400, maybe even 500 million bushels from a year ago. If you look at the balance sheet right now, they're calling our ending stocks being down over 700 million. But of course, you got to factor in a three quarters of the way through the year type scenario. So do I think we'll be down maybe 400, 450 million bushels from a year ago? I think it's a very distinct possibility. Yes, that feed number is probably going to have to get adjusted at some point, but at the same time, exports are still probably 50 to 100 million bushels too low, whereas ethanol margins have creeped back into profitability to where we're running pretty darn good ethanol numbers every week here lately. So I think usage is going to still remain strong. I think you'll still have a tight stocks on both old crop and new in July. It's just here in June, whenever you get this acreage number, I'm just afraid that it's going to be one of those numbers that's going to throw a cold, damp cloth on everything.
Are you very worried about the price of soybeans at this time?
Well, Todd, beans were so resilient there for so long. They really performed well, better than what we thought that they were going to. But right now, beans certainly look susceptible. I mean, you're in a situation where whenever you see the crude oil market go down, soybean oil goes down. And then when soybean oil goes down, the bean market really struggles. So we can tell that a big reason that we were able to rally was due to the fact that soybean oil was so strong with the news from the RVO. I mean, you're going to have to get renewable fuels data. You're going to have to get weather something to feed the bull in that bean market, because without a steady dose of bullish information, it's really struggling to put together continued rallies. So we thought anything above 1050 was a good way to, come in there and at least add to a few sales, not get super aggressive. But the problem, once again, Todd, is that, 1050, you have to get a ways above that to get a cash price where most people feel like they can live with it. So it's a tough game right now. And am I concerned about bean prices? Yeah, I'm concerned about bean prices. But for right now, I don't want to get super aggressive. If I can't show a profit, I want to at least see what maybe Mother Nature has to hold here over the next, 3, 4 weeks.
We'll talk with you again next week. Thanks much.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Don.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, Senate Democrats are battling against the one big beautiful bill's cuts to federal SNAP support. The bill's provisions increase states' responsibility for SNAP cost, modify work requirements for recipients, and could lead to substantial benefit cuts for millions of Americans, they say. Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member Amy Klobuchar says Americans will also feel the pinch at the grocery store.
We're here for one simple reason, and that is that this bill will raise grocery costs for so many families. The Congressional Budget Office has confirmed that this big, beautiful bill would take food assistance away from 4 million Americans, including 1 million seniors, 800,000 parents with school-aged children, and 1.4 million people who live where it's hard to find a job.
The Minnesota Democrat says more than half of the American public does not like what's in the bill.
According to the latest Fox News poll, 60% are opposed to this bill, and 2-1, Americans think it will hurt their families.
The governor of Kansas, Laura Kelly, too, says she strongly objects to what's in the bill.
This deeply unpopular bill is expected to gut SNAP benefits, endangering our most vulnerable and resulting in detrimental effects to our economy.
This political posturing may not be necessary, as the Senate parliamentarian who acts as a legislative umpire has ruled against the key SNAP provision in the president's One Big Beautiful Spending Bill. Elizabeth McDonough says the SNAP provision to force the states to pick up a sliding amount of food stamp benefits based on payment error rates violates a Senate rule. The Byrd Rule, named after the late West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd, prohibited legislating on budget reconciliation bills. Here's Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican.
I think there's still going to be attempts to look at alternative ways to craft some form of state cost share that complies with the Byrd Rule. So this might not be over yet. Hopefully it's not.
But if the ruling stands, it would be a big win for Democrats who targeted SNAP savings in their long-running farm bill feud with Republicans and would punch a huge funding hole in the GOP tax bill. Grassley has some long-standing, though so far unsuccessful, ideas on other kinds of savings.
Get rid of the proposal to increase payment limits from $125,000 to $155,000. We can also increase savings by closing the actively engaged loophole that allows Wall Street bankers to cash government checks meant for farmers with dirt under their fingernails.
But without a quick solution or a Senate override of the parliamentarian, action could be slowed. President Trump has set a goal of having the bill on his desk by July 4th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA RMA recently released county yields for the 2024 crop year. These might trigger some crop insurance payments for last fall's harvest. The county yields are used by the Risk Management Agency to determine area plan payments, including the Supplemental and Enhanced Coverage Options, or ECO and SCO. County corn and soybean yields for Illinois were mostly at or above trend lines. Exceptions include counties in southern Illinois for both crops and some northern Illinois counties for soybeans. Payments for revenue-based crop insurance, ECO and SCO plans for 2024 corn and soybeans will be triggered in many counties in Illinois and prevalent across the U.S. for 2024. This is in part because the final harvest insurance prices calculated last fall were lower than insured prices, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Nick Paulson.
Final harvest insurance prices for corn and soybeans in 2024 were below springtime projected prices. For corn, the harvest price was $4.16, or 10.7% below the projected price of $4.66. For soybeans, the harvest price was $10.03 a bushel, or 13.2% below the projected price of $11.55. These insurance price declines for corn and soybeans in 2024 result in the potential for payments from higher coverage level revenue insurance plans such as ECO and SCO.
For instance, in the state of Illinois, Paulson estimates corn payments will be triggered in 43 of the 102 counties for crops insured at 95% ECO. Soybean payments will be triggered for 91 counties. Likewise, Paulson says SCO and ECO payments for last fall's corn and soybean harvest should be triggered in most counties across the United States.
For corn, we estimate that 70% of counties will trigger payments on revenue-based 95% ECO coverage, while 56% of counties will trigger payments on 90% ECO coverage. 48% of counties will trigger SCO payments. For soybeans, 86% of U.S. counties will trigger payments on revenue-based 95% ECO coverage. Nearly 75% of counties will trigger payments on 90% ECO, and 65% will trigger payments on SCO. Payments are less likely or limited to 95% ECO in a small band of counties through the Central Corn Belt. This includes southern Iowa, northern Missouri, central Illinois, and Indiana.
Revenue losses severe enough to trigger maximum payments occurred in a number of counties in the Plain States, including the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. Some counties in Minnesota and Wisconsin will also trigger maximum payments, along with areas of Kentucky, Ohio, and most counties in the Southeast and up the Eastern Seaboard.
Payments to producers who purchase coverage in 2024 will help to partially mitigate the poor returns to corn and soybean production. The prevalent payments from ECO and SCO in 2024, along with increased subsidy rates for ECO beginning in 2025, and proposed increases to SCO subsidy rates and coverage levels in the current House and Senate proposals for the Farm Bill will encourage even more use moving forward.
Use of the federally subsidized ECO and SEO crop insurance program has been relatively low. Again, the University of Illinois agricultural economist expects this to change over time. If you'd like to learn more about the payments in your county, you can do that by looking up the June 17 article authored by Nick Paulson on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Tenori. He's the CEO and president of T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hello. Thank you for being with us again on a Thursday. The weather has been interesting for this growing season, and we're set up, at least at this point, it appears, to have a really good corn and soybean crop across the whole of the Midwest. I guess you'd call it kind of quiet at this time. What are you seeing?
Well, it's certainly been quiet because of all the rain that we've seen. If you look at the rainfall amounts over the last 2 to 6 weeks, they've been pretty great across a pretty nice area. It hasn't been too wet for most people, and it hasn't been too dry for most. Even though temperatures were cool early in the period, it's been really warm lately, and that's helping out with growth. So because of that, the weather just isn't really providing us with much to talk about, because typically, at this time of the year, you're watching out for a few different things. You don't want it to be too wet, you don't want it to be too dry, and you don't want to have some extreme heat situation. And basically, none of those are on the table as we speak today. And because of that, you know, things are very quiet. The only thing we would say, maybe to provide at least a little bit of a counter-argument, is that the overall health of the corn and soybean crops don't match the weather perfectly. Weather, we would say, has been pretty much favorable for this growing season so far. But if you look at those condition ratings, and we're talking about the proportions that were rated good and excellent as of a few days ago, they're not super high. They're actually pretty average for this time of year. So that does provide at least a small counter argument that maybe everything isn't perfect out there.
Let's turn your attention to the next, 5 to 10 days. What kind of weather conditions are you expecting?
Well, we have another few days of rain to get through. We have an upper-level system that's moving across the northern Corn Belt and bringing some nice rains to Minnesota today. That's also extending into parts of the Dakotas. So corn and soybeans there are getting some nice rains. And we'll see a few more pockets of rain and thunderstorms all the way through Monday. Just a little more rain. Now, are we going to see big, huge, gigantic rainfall amounts? Probably not, though we do want to point out that Nebraska overnight saw some really big totals. More than 7 inches fell in around the Grand Island region, and then some areas to the south and east from there saw well over 3 inches of rain. So Nebraska is pretty much done for right now. They've had a lot of rain, and they'll be able to ride that out for a long time.
So that gets us to the end of the month of June. I do want to talk about July and August just a bit. Let's play a game, I guess. Relatively speaking, I've traveled across the Corn Belt enough to know that you can go into pollination. That'll start to happen the first week of July in some places, but mostly mid to the end of the month with good moisture levels, and have a crop even if it stops raining the rest of the way out. Can you talk to me, at least for corn, can you tell me what you've historically seen in parts of the Corn Belt and what that means to a crop if we get to pollination with good moisture?
Well, the scenario that you're describing with having good moisture and then all of a sudden everything changes has happened in the past, so it's always a possibility. Probably the most notable time was in 1983 when rains basically shut off for July and August, and it turned incredibly hot with one of the hottest summers on record, and that was preceded by one of the cooler springs on record, so that was a very unusual year. So that certainly can happen, and if it were to turn unfavorably warm and unfavorably dry, say around July 10th to 15th, and then through the end of the season, well, that would matter more than the weather up to that point in time, because, you know, the key part of weather basically starts now and then lasts for about six more weeks. So, you know, if you have a unfavorable close to the season, that'll start removing all the favorableness that you were talking about back in May and June and maybe even into early July. So the season is not over yet, but Todd, the more likely scenario is that we basically don't have a crazy weather situation. And because of that, it's going to be hard to have a real small crop here. Now, is it going to be a bumper crop? That'll be affected by what happens from July 10th forward as well. If it were to stay nice and rainy, and also temperatures dropped a lot and were a lot cooler than what we're experiencing today, that would certainly reduce stress levels on corn, and that would make it possible to have a really fantastic crop, and probably a crop that most people would be surprised about. So the point, though, is that it really is the weather that's starting now, and then especially in 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, that's going to start to drive yield potential. This is still kind of the very beginning of the season, and even though we are moving into the heart of it, it's really a matter of going forward that drives your yields.
Can you put soybean yield in that same sort of historical context?
Yeah, well, soybeans are less temperature dependent. I mean, we've certainly seen that with just by watching Brazil, even watching the United States. But, you know, soybeans don't care so much about how hot it is or how cool it is. What they really like is rain. And so if you can give them nice rainfall throughout the entire season, that's how you get a really nice soybean crop. And we've seen that a few times in the past. But the point here is that this is kind of the same story. If it were to stop raining around July 10th, you could have a pretty poor soybean crop, because what really drives soybeans is that last 6 to 7 weeks of its cycle, which doesn't start again until about July 10th. So I guess the point here, Todd, is that even though things look really great right now and we don't see any reason to have a major concern going forward, you know, you can't throw in the towel now and walk away and come back next spring and start thinking about things. This is really the time to pay attention to it, even if things do look great today.
Hey, thank you much, Mike. We appreciate you taking so much time with us today and giving us that historical context.
For sure, Todd. Always great talking to you.
Mike Tenura is the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather. Find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org, where later today you'll find our Commodity Week program. We'll record around 2:15, should be up on the site by 6 p.m., probably much earlier than that today. And of course, you can always make a donation to Illinois Public Media as we finish out our fiscal year by June 30. That's Monday. We need to have everything in the bank that we'll be using next year. We thank you for your donation. You can do that at willag.org. Hit the donate button at the top of the page, or willgive.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.